Dateline Washington, Tuesday, February 17th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, what's in the stimulus plan now that it's law? What will it actually do for our economy? And even if it does great things for our economy, what will be the impact of all this spending of money we don't have in the very near future? We'll ask those questions and many more to Peter Sepp, Vice President for Communications at the National Taxpayers Union. Also in this edition, the future of the Big Three, specifically two of the Big Three, namely GM and Chrysler, as they submit their plans today to the government and ask for additional billions of dollars in taxpayer aid to keep their operations afloat. We'll talk with Marty Padgett, executive editor at thecarconnection.com and High Gear Media, about what these plans are likely to contain and what the reaction from the Obama administration is likely to be. Plus, more troops for Afghanistan. Sources at the Pentagon suggest as many as 17,000 additional U.S. forces could be headed to that theater of the war on terror. We'll ask retired General Tom McInerney what would be the best strategy to use in deploying those troops against the enemy. And they are free. Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compion, the imprisoned Border Patrol agents, have been released from prison following President Bush's commutation on his final day in office. We'll talk about that and the ongoing fight for border security with Al Garza of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. All that plus Tuesday's headlines follows our discussion on the impact of the stimulus bill with Peter Sepp, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Peter Sepp, Vice President for Communications at the National Taxpayers Union just outside Washington. As President Obama here on Tuesday signs into law the $787 billion economic stimulus package, we want to get Pete's thoughts on what exactly it's going to accomplish, what it won't, and what that leaves for future generations. And Pete, thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
What was your overall assessment? This is a debate that obviously played out over a number of weeks as the House did the initial version. The Senate tweaked it a little bit in order to bring on a couple of moderate Republicans, and then it was tweaked a little bit more to have a united bill in both chambers. In the end, what did your analysis show?
I think that this bill may, with some of its tax provisions for small business, save a few thousand jobs from going out of existence. It may actually create a few thousand or maybe even a million temporary jobs through the additional spending. But as the Congressional Budget Office has shown, the short-term spending and the debt required to finance that spending will eventually catch up with the United States' balance sheet and will actually lead to a slower economy a couple of years from now.
So even if this actually does stimulate the economy to at least a moderate extent in the out years, we're still going to wish it didn't happen?
Yes, absolutely. The fundamental problem is the federal government cannot create money out of thin air, although the Federal Reserve can print more, and that has inflationary effects. From a fiscal standpoint, a borrowed dollar comes out of one pocket, goes into another. And that means higher taxes in the future or less borrowing capacity for the private sector in the future. Either way, the economic effects from those actions outweigh any kind of positive benefits we might be experiencing now. We will pay for this bill later, and not just in terms of higher national debt, but in terms of poor economic performance.
And we'll get back to some of that in just a moment, Pete. As I'm sure you're aware, congressional Republicans, I believe House Republicans in particular, had an alternative plan that during the floor debate, they said loudly and frequently would create twice the number of jobs for half the price tag for the American taxpayer. Did you have a chance to go over that one as well?
Yes, that was called the Economic Recovery and Middle Class Tax Relief Act. And what that did was look at across-the-board income and corporate income tax rate reductions, immediate expensing and other provisions to allow small businesses to take write-offs for investments and expansions. There was also a relief from the alternative minimum tax, and there was an actual spending decrease contained in the legislation. legislation. Now, those of a Keynesian economic persuasion would say that's suicide, but really, when you review the available literature, there is as much to suggest, if not more, that keeping government spending low is better during a recession than keeping it high. And in fact, the economy may benefit more from having fewer government dollars being taken out of the private sector in the form of borrowing or taxation.
We're talking with Pete Sepp, who is the Vice President for Communications at the National Taxpayers Union. And Pete, when you look at the tax provisions in the stimulus bill compared to the ones you just talked to, why do you believe the ones in the Republican plan would be so much more effective?
For one, the policies were much more permanent. The reductions in tax rates would be in place for a number of years. For another, reducing tax rates themselves tend to send a signal both to individuals and markets that tax policy is shifting in a fundamental direction. When you're simply giving out tax rebate checks or issuing new tax credits, they don't have that kind of permanency to them. They have the here today, gone tomorrow message that really doesn't reassure people that the federal government will be easing its share of the economy for the long term. And so that's one reason.
Pete, you have obviously competing theories on what the best type of economic approach is, and both sides like to use history to solidify their case. Republicans will talk about the early 1980s when the economy was very difficult. President Reagan introduced sweeping tax cuts, and they say it ushered in the largest peacetime expansion in American history. Those on the left will say that we also had a booming economy in the 90s, and that followed the Clinton tax increases. They also say the New Deal went a pretty long way in injecting money into the economy, and while the unemployment rate didn't improve drastically between the start of FDR's term and the start of World War II, they say it still shows that that was an effective way to go. How do we differentiate between which historical examples are proven to be successful and which ones might not have the reputation they deserve?
I think there are more historical examples on the side of tax cuts. You have the Coolidge administration during the 1920s, the Johnson administration, which followed through on John F. Kennedy's proposed tax cuts after his death. And even the boom of the 1990s, especially in the stock market, was not preceded by Bill Clinton's tax increases, but rather his tax cuts, the ones he signed into law in 1997 that actually reduced rates on capital gains and other key economic activities. I also think that if we look at other instances of governments trying to put more spending into the economy, we'll see a lot more failures, not only in Japan and South American countries, but during the 1970s in this country.
Pete, obviously many conservatives thinking there's a lot of pork in this plan, and $787 billion, there's obviously going to be some. What do you define as pork, and how much of this bill is pork in your opinion?
If you define the stimulus bill as spending targeted only to try, maybe not succeed, but try and generate economic activity, there's at least $200 billion in pork in this bill. By that, I mean funds for things like NASA and the U.S. Census and the Army Corps of Engineers, which won't necessarily be directed at creating jobs or generating more value for the economy, but rather are simply pent-up spending demands that have been in committees and on the agendas of Democrats for years. That's not really related to stimulus. We also have yet to see what kinds of projects will be funded by some of the relatively generalized funding that's being given for infrastructure. I mean, there's an outline of how much we want to spend on roads, how much on transit, but the actual details of what's going to get funded at the state and local level could look very ugly when we learn them in the coming months.
Pete, let's get back to a couple of points you made earlier on, and that's that the out years of this stimulus package, given the fact that all of this money is money we don't have right now, we've got to go either get it from somewhere or print it, which means our currency will be worth less because there's more of it. In terms of borrowing money from places like China and other countries that have helped to finance our deficits in the past, what is the best way to gauge how long we can keep doing that and when eventually that option will run dry?
I think that right now we're looking at a gross interest payment on our current national debt of more than $300 billion a year. If that starts to move into $500 billion or $600 billion territory, which could easily happen in the next couple of years, that should be our warning signal. I think interest on the debt could very well become the single largest budget item. And we also have to take into account the fact, yes, certainly it should be of concern that foreign entities are buying up our debts. Maybe we should be equally concerned that they won't be able to buy up our debts. China's economy, as well as those of other nations, are suffering too. Their citizens may not have the money to buy up these colossal debts that are being issued by the United States. If that happens, the spiral just builds upon itself. The interest required to sell these bonds has to get higher and higher, and so that puts an even bigger strain on the federal budget. We could very well see a fiscal meltdown in a short period of time, especially if we throw more money into the financial industry bailout.
A couple minutes left with Pete Sepp of the National Taxpayers Union. And Pete, obviously this bill has been signed into law. The debate is over. The impact that it'll have, as we've just discussed, could be very wide-ranging. Is there anything that Congress can do to put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak, and reverse course in a way that's going to make a difference?
At the very least, members of Congress can get back to cutting spending to offset all of these increases through the appropriations process. In fact, it's vital that they do so. Many of the programs funded in the stimulus bill are not short-term in nature. In other words, what they're doing is raising the bar for funding, creating a huge inflated baseline that all these agencies will expect to get year after year, not just this year or the following year, but forever. And because that inflated baseline could be the assumption that all these appropriators use for future budgets, the stimulus itself could end up stimulating budget growth for 10 or 20 years. Congress has to avoid that by revisiting programs that aren't effective and telling agencies, look, whatever short-term infusion of cash you're getting, don't expect to get it in years from now.
Pete, unfortunately, our time is up. Always great of you to spend time with us, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
Peter Sepp is Vice President for Communications at the National Taxpayers Union. This is Dateline Washington.